Wednesday, May 18th, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is off to a strong start. Hope you, your family, friends, hope everyone in your world is doing well right now, and we have a lot to get to today. But you know, before we jump in, just want to remind everyone out there, be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com. We've got new articles going up every week. We have links to the podcast. We have links to the video. And yes, we have links to the Daily Dose gear. If you need a t-shirt, you need a sweatshirt, maybe you just need a coffee mug, you can find all of those links over at DailyDoseSports.com. But you know, this week on DailyDoseSports.com, I actually released an article where I preview every single Denver Bronco game coming up this next year. We look at every single regular season game and let you know exactly how they're going to go. Yes, we had to peek into the Daily Dose crystal ball just a little bit, but I will let you know exactly how the Broncos season is going to go. So be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week. Hey, today on the show, it is a busy time of year in the world of sports right now. Of course, we know Major League Baseball is rolling along. The Stanley Cup playoffs are now down to just 8 teams remaining. Over in the East, we've got the Tampa Bay Lightning versus the Florida Panthers, and then we have the New York Rangers against the Carolina Hurricanes. In the West, we have the Colorado Avalanche versus the St. Louis Blues, and then we have the Calgary Flames facing the Edmonton Oilers. We will see who ends up advancing. Then we switch over to the NBA playoffs, where we're now down to the Final Four. In the East, we have the Miami Heat versus the Boston Celtics. The Celtics, of course, had to survive that Game 7 against the Milwaukee Bucks. And then in the West, it is the Golden State Warriors against the surprising Dallas Mavericks, who beat the heavy favorite top seed Phoenix Suns in 7 games. And yes, one side note, the Kardashian curse is alive and well with the Phoenix Suns.
Oh, that's a good name for it.
And you know, the one thing that really stood out to me over the weekend with all these things going on was that we had 5 Game 7s in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And in the first 2 rounds of the NBA playoffs, we've had just 2 series going to a Game 7. Okay, so that isn't that fun. But how were those Game 7s? How did they actually go? Well, the 2 NBA Game 7s, the Boston Celtics beat the Milwaukee Bucks by 28. And then the Dallas Mavericks beat the Phoenix Suns by 33. Meanwhile, of the 5 Game 7s in the NHL, 4 of them were one-goal games. 2 of them went to overtime. The biggest blowout in all those Game 7s was a 2-0 win by Edmonton over the Los Angeles Kings. Hey, I'm not hating on the NBA. I swear I'm not. I actually think these conference finals should be really fun, and the NBA has to be thrilled with the matchups that they have. But man, the Stanley Cup playoffs are just so intense. If you're not watching, you're missing out. I know I say that every single year, but I'm saying it again. However, we all know Major League Baseball can be in the playoffs. The NBA can be in the finals. The NHL can be in the finals. And yet, we would all rather talk about the National Football League because the NFL is king in this country and we love it. Well, today we are going to be joined by someone that knows the NFL and knows it really, really well in a completely different way. In fact, we have so much to get to. Let's get over to our conversation with NFL agent Alex Beaudry right now. Joining us today on the Daily Dose, we have something a little different for you. You know, so many times we talk about professional sports, we talk about collegiate sports, and we think of the teams, we think of the athletes, we think of the coaches, but make no mistake, there are a ton of people out there that are doing big work behind the scenes, and their job is really to try to put people into the best possible situations to be successful. Well, today on the Daily Dose, we have one of those people because we are being joined by founder of Impact Sports Management and National Football League Players Association, certified agent Alex Beaudry. Alex, thank you so much for joining us today on the Daily Dose.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm super pumped to have this conversation, so thank you.
Alex, where are you joining us from today? Just first off, it looks like you are up in Milwaukee area.
I am in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm in Packer country. So
okay. Yes. Okay. Is that where you're from? Are you from that area?
Born and raised.
Born and raised back there. What is your sports background? Were you an athlete growing up?
Yep. So, my parents had me in sports from the time I could walk, whether it was soccer, t-ball. My dad was a huge baseball fan. So played a lot of baseball, a lot of golf. And then, you know, as I got into high school, I played football, I played baseball, I played golf here in Wisconsin. Baseball was a summer sport at the time and golf was a spring sport. So that's how I was able to kind of do both. And then, you know, I'm about 6'2", 6'3". I was about 5'5" my sophomore year in high school.
Oh,
and then
wow.
Junior year, I just exploded. So I was actually cut from my my JV team. And that's actually how I got into coaching basketball as a senior. I went to a small school. There was about 400 kids in the whole school. So about 100 kids in my graduating class, and all my friends were still on the basketball team. So I wanted to find a way to continue to hang out with them. So the boys freshman coach at the time said, well, hey, if you want to be my assistant, you know, you know the game, why don't you do that? And then that way you can still travel with the team. You can still hang out with your friends and then you'll just sit the bench. So you and I were just chatting before we hit record here.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had that coaching background. So that's actually how I got into coaching. And then I did that for 2 years. And then I switched over to the girls side. And I was a varsity girls basketball coach for 10 years. So, you know, my playing days ended in, you know, after my senior year in high school. I was a scrawny kid, hated the weight room. So, you know, going Division I football was not in my cards, but I knew that and I was okay with it. So I switched to kind of a more academic background, but I've always stayed in touch with sports. And like I said, I had a blast coaching high school level sports over a decade. So it was good. It's nice to stay in touch with the game.
It is. And you get those relationships with those kids, you build those relationships. It's funny now because now I'm all old and you see some of these kids and like they're grown, they have their own kids and you're seeing how you affect them in life. But it's interesting because you do have to rely back on those principles so many times in life and things that you taught. And sometimes you go, oh yeah, I got to remember that's what I taught. That's what I have to do in life. I know sports sometimes gets a bad rap, but man, there are so many life lessons.
It's the perfect life lesson. Cause it's scrunched down to 60 minutes or, you know, 40 minutes in basketball, whatever it might be. Yeah. And you get an immediate result. You win or you lose that day. And either you win or you learn. That's a great quote by Conor McGregor or his coach that I really
sure.
love. You win or you learn. And hopefully you can teach those kids to understand that in life. And, you know, probably the most famous discussion you have with athletes is, hey, you might not like your coach, but guess what? You're not going to like your boss either. You got to figure
exactly.
out how to work with people. And, you know, that's just one example of those kind of life lessons. And I really enjoyed it. I do miss it, but as you and I were talking, I got two little kids at home and the time commitment in high school sports is it's 6 days a week, it's 6 nights a week.
Yeah.
And it just got a little a little too much. So I had to move on, but really enjoyed it.
I did too. And I miss it. I just don't miss it enough to have that demand again because it is so much. It's such a demand on your time. So growing up in the Wisconsin area, who are your teams? Who are, I'm assuming you're, you know, Packers fan, Brewers fan, Bucks fan. Is that how you're cheering?
Yeah, absolutely. So, like I said, Packers are king here. Pretty much the entire state of Wisconsin. As you get a little further south, you know, you might have a few Bears fans creeping up from Illinois.
Okay.
You got Vikings fans out in the west, but this is Packer country, and I've been blessed. I'm 32. I've known pretty much two quarterbacks my entire life. It's been Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
So they've always been competitive. Which, you know, you talk to my parents' age folks. It was not the case, you know, '70s, the
'80s. No,
it was rough to be a Packers fan. So I've been blessed from that standpoint. And you know, the Brewers have been great ever since they've built Miller Park. They've been a lot more competitive, and they've had some good teams. David Stern, the general manager and now the president of the Brewers, has done a good job keeping that team competitive despite the payroll disparities in baseball.
Right.
And then the Bucks are reigning national championships.
Yeah.
They had a huge win last night over Boston, a huge comeback win. Giannis Antetokounmpo's got the keys to the city right now. He is the king of Milwaukee. I will admit that I'm a bandwagon fan when it comes to
That's
the Bucks.
All right.
So the last few years have been fun, but you know, like all those dark years where they won 12 games to draft Jabari Parker. I forgot all those years.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Hey, I'm a Nuggets fan. I can feel all of that pain. That's real easy because we have so many failures here with our Denver Nuggets. But kind of an odd question for you. We'll get into this a little more, but you become a sports agent. When you do, do you lose all that rooting interest? Or are you just so focused? Or are you still like, hey, that's still my team?
I'm still a fan, you know.
Okay, I love it.
I have my own podcast, and you know, we were leading up to the draft, and I didn't have anybody in this draft class that was going to go in the first, second, third, even fourth, fifth round.
Okay.
So, as I was doing my podcast, I got to be a fan. You know, yeah. I don't have any conflicting interests there. So, you know, we did a draft breakdown, and I was talking about which team should do what players I like, and it's still fun to be a sports fan, and that's I think the reason why people are gravitated towards the sports industry because we're all fans at heart.
Well, and when you're coaching, you can't be a fan. You'll die 1,000 deaths if you are because it's too right. brutal. You have to be coach guy. I remember one of my very first years coaching and I was just a lowly chump assistant. My head coach comes over and tells me, he goes, hey, remember, you're a coach tonight. I need feedback. I need info. Do not be a cheerleader. I don't need someone cheering. I need someone giving me, and you're like, no, he's right. I do. I can't just be over there. Come on, God. Like that doesn't work. I've got to be analyzing and working and your brain just can't work as a fan when you're coaching. So it is, it's fun. That's my guilty pleasure as you know, like a Broncos fan, an Avalanche fan, I get to just sit there and just be an idiot and not have to think and just come on, who cares? You know, who cares? I can be the moron up in the stands for a change. I didn't get to do that for a long time. Alex, how do you decide to become a sports agent? How does that come about?
Yeah, so I've always wanted to be in sports. You know, when I was a kid, you know, I would have much rather have been the guy playing on Sundays. But, you know, like I said, I knew in high school my playing days were going to end probably after my senior year in high school. So you start thinking about college. And, you know, at the time I went to Marquette, which is right here in Milwaukee. At the time, had a really good basketball program. It was, you know, Dominic James, Drill McNeil, Wes Matthews, who's still here. That was a Tom Crean led Marquette team. So, you know, they had some good basketball teams. And, you know, as I got into college, I wanted to figure out, okay, you know, what's next? And at first I wanted to go to medical school. And then I went to my first chemistry class. And again, I went to a small high school. So now I'm sitting in a freshman chemistry class that's got 200 kids in it.
Sure.
And I fell behind pretty quick and I figured, okay, you know, this medical stuff isn't going to be for me. So what's the next best thing? So I looked at law school and I kind of fell into a great situation at the time. And now we're talking probably 2010, 2011. Marquette was one of only a handful of schools that had a sports law specific program. So you could go and get your law degree here in Wisconsin. We're the only state where if you graduate from a law school here in Wisconsin, so either Marquette or the University of Wisconsin, you don't have to pass the bar. You're automatically admitted to the bar. And you could study sports law. So I was like, well, that seems really cool. So I switched all my focus I switched majors. I became a criminology and law studies major, applied to law school, stayed here in Milwaukee at Marquette. And, you know, I was able to take courses specific to sports law. So amateur sports law, how do state athletic associations work? How does the NCAA's regulations work? How does it interact with other pieces of the law? Professional sports law, how do collective bargaining agreements work? And, you know, kind of all the behind the scenes things that we as sports fans don't necessarily think too much about, but that is incredibly important to these leagues. You know, for one example would be free agency. You know, people my age, you know, free agency in the NFL has been around pretty much my entire life.
Right.
That wasn't the case until like 92, 93.
Yeah, I remember that.
In there. So the standing for that, baseball's antitrust exemption, you know, those types of things. So it made that really cool. And, you know, I went to be an agent. I'm like, this is what I want to do. I interned for a small sports marketing firm here in the Milwaukee area. But then, you know, you start to figure out where the job market is and the sports world is really difficult to break into. It's very much a who do you know business. And, you know, starting out right out of law school, there's not a ton of money in it unless you are very well connected to a large agency, which I was not. So I went and got a job in the health insurance world. For 6-7 years, I was a health insurance broker here in Wisconsin. I sold to municipalities and counties and school districts and helped set up their employee benefits plans. but I've just always had this itch to get back into sports. So in 2020, I applied to the NFLPA to be an agent. And then, of course, COVID shut everything down for a year and a half.
Right.
But then last year, last summer, they kind of got back on schedule. And, you know, I attended the seminar, took the test, and was certified last October. So that's my life story in a 30,000 foot view on how I got into this crazy world.
Okay, coming back, we still have a lot to get to today with Alex. How does one actually go about becoming a sports agent? What is involved in that process? And what advice would he have for anyone that wants to become a sports agent themselves? We still have a lot to get to today on The Daily Dose.
Well, what kind of certification do you have to have to, like, what do you have to pass to be certified? You talked about a test that you have to take. What is it that you have to take?
So the process to be an agent is actually really simple. It's not easy, but it's really simple.
Okay.
You have to have a postgraduate degree, so either an MBA or a law degree. You apply to the NFLPA, you pay a fee. It's like $2,500. They do a background check. And then, assuming you pass the background check, you attend a 2-day seminar. This year it was online with COVID and everything else. And they basically run through the collective bargaining agreement in two days. It goes by super fast. I mean, you got to be pretty well prepared heading into it.
Yeah.
But they overview, they hit the points they want you to really emphasize. And then there's a 60 question multiple choice test. It's open book, open note, and you get 3 hours. And it sounds really easy, but I think, and these are all lawyers and they're all people with masters, you know, MBAs, but I think people take that for granted. And I mean, my class, my quote unquote class, the pass rate was 41%, I believe.
Oh, wow.
So more than half of the people that took the test did not pass. So it's, you know, it's something I'm proud of that I passed on the first try.
Sure.
So yeah, it's kind of like a mini bar exam, but just on the CBA for the NFL.
What's the toughest part of the test? What's a question that tripped you up that you can think of? Or do you have one that you were like, that section just killed me?
The hardest thing is just to slow down and read.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
You know, these are other agents and lawyers who write these questions.
Sure.
So if you just like skim the question, you're going too fast. There might be one answer that seems really obvious, but I think they want you to think it's obvious. You know, you got to really slow down. Okay, what section of the collective bargaining agreement are you talking about? What rule applies here? You know, there's a little bit of math that might trip some people up. Like, okay, they give you the rookie wage scale, for example. So every rookie who was just drafted a few weeks ago, based on what draft slot they were in, you know exactly how much money they're going to get. And there's like a 25% rule. So no cap charge can be more than 25% than the previous year.
Okay.
So they'll give you like an end number and like a middle number. And then based on those two numbers, you have to figure out the salary cap for each 4 years. So there is a little bit of math that if you're not comfortable with those numbers,
sure,
that might throw you off. But, you know, again, I think the biggest thing that throws people off is they look at it and say, oh, it's 60 questions for 3 hours and it's open book, open note. How hard can this be?
How hard could it be? Yeah.
And it's pretty difficult.
So you've gone through this. Maybe you didn't go through it, you know, by the book. Maybe you didn't go down this course the way anyone would draw it up. But if you are giving advice now to a young person that said they wanted to go into the sports agent business, what advice would you be keying on? What would you be telling them?
The number one thing that I wish I would have done a better job of was taking advantage of internships when I was in law school.
Okay.
You know, law schools are very well connected. You know, a lot of times they'll have someone who graduated from there who may be working for a professional team or maybe working for an agency. So take advantage of those relationships and use that to break in. When I was in law school, I very much took the approach, I'm going to treat it kind of like a job. I'm going to go in, get my work done and go home. I didn't really do a great job of networking while at school. And that probably made things a little bit harder for me, if I'm being honest, looking back. There was a guy who graduated from Marquette a year above me. I believe he's now the pro director of scouting at the San Francisco 49ers. So he did a great job of getting right in, became a scouting assistant and, you know, worked his way up through the scouting ranks. And now he's the director of pro scouting at the San Francisco 49ers. So that would be an example of, you know, he knew what he wanted and did it. I kind of wavered and, you know, my path kind of weaved, but at the same time, you know, I don't kick myself too hard for it because I learned how to sell in my old business. I learned how businesses operate.
Yeah.
And now that I'm a little bit older, I think it's a little bit easier for a college-aged man to trust me because I'm 32, I have a mortgage, I have a house.
Sure.
Where if you're 25, fresh out of law school, you don't know too much more than they do, to be honest.
No,
so
no, of course not.
I have a little bit more life experience now. So,
well, and there's also always something to be said for learning to hustle a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Learning to kind of grind, and maybe you didn't get that easy step, but you go, yeah, but I learned how to kind of work harder than the person next to me. Always something there for that as well. You join a small agency, and then do you decide to branch off and create your own? How does that come about?
So I created my own agency right away. So again, sports is difficult to break into. You know, the large agencies, typically, if you don't know someone while you're in law school, you don't do an internship, they don't really, like if you go on Indeed or LinkedIn, there's no postings for sports agent jobs.
Right.
Like, you know, the Athletes First, the CAAs, the big firms, they kind of know who they want. And a lot of times they will only take you if you already have established clients. So to be honest, I didn't want to start a business. Being an entrepreneur is something that I never really strive to be. It's not really in my DNA, but I did it out of necessity. It's something I wanted to do. It's what I want my career to be. So I went out and started it, and, you know, we'll see. I would love to eventually link up with a bigger agency. It's just easier from a resources standpoint, yeah, and, you know, a reputation standpoint. I mean, I'm building something from ground zero, and you're reaching out to high profile collegiate athletes, and they're looking at Impact Sports. Like, who is that? I've never heard of them. And it's not impossible, but it's much more difficult than, you know, if David Mulligetta or Drew Rosenhaus or some of these big agents, sure, are calling them. You know, they have that name and that reputation that they've built over 30 plus years. So
right,
there's pros and cons to everything, but that's kind of how I created my own agency and why.
So then what does Impact Sports Management kind of provide? Like, what is it that you're going to be doing on a day-to-day level for your clients, or even trying to get clients? How does that work?
So how I got clients, so I had 6 guys signed this last year. A lot of it was through social media, Twitter, Instagram, and the likes there. And, you know, that process starts for me, I got certified in October, so it started a little later. But, you know, started reaching out. I followed the All-Star Game circuit pretty hard. So everybody knows the Senior Bowl and the East-West Shrine Game and, you know, those games. But there's, you know, a handful of others that have had good success about showcasing guys and getting them to the league. So I was following who are those All-Star Games targeting, right? Who are maybe some of these athletes who have a shot that aren't getting a ton of attention from the bigger agencies? And so I was following them and started reaching out to some of these guys on Twitter. And, you know, a lot of my guys were FCS Division II type level guys, but they all had a ton of talent. And, you know, I was able to sign a bunch of them right in January as their seasons were wrapping up. And then it quickly turns from, okay, great, you're now a client, to, okay, how do we get you ready for your pro day? So a lot of it's, you know, linking them up with trainers, you know, maybe sending them across the country to a trainer, or if they got a facility in their hometown they want to work with, arranging all of those, you know, logistics,
okay,
getting them in there. And then as you approach March, it's traveling to pro day. So I put some miles on my 4Runner this year, driving out to Missouri. I was supposed to go to South Dakota, Northern Iowa, and it's networking with scouts, trying to figure out, hey, where do we think we can go? Are we a priority free agent, or, you know, mini camp tryout type guy? And then between your pro day and the draft is like purgatory. It's really hard because you're just waiting. Now there's nothing more you can do. You got all your film, you got your pro day results, and now it's just kind of sitting and waiting. And then, you know, the week before the draft, things really pick up. Teams start reaching out, asking questions, getting more information. You get an idea of, you know, what your guy might really do here. And then draft day is, you know, fun in some ways, really stressful in others.
I bet.
And then once they find a home, great. If not, it's exploring other leagues. So XFL is getting off the ground next year. Yeah. USFL is in week 4 or 5 now. Is Canadian football an option? So trying to find these guys an opportunity to continue to play and keep having film, and they all eventually want to get back to the NFL. But if this round didn't work, we got to keep playing, because if you take a year off, your career is over. You're not going to get another shot in the NFL.
Right,
so
right.
That's what's going on in my world right now.
Wow, and then, you're staying busy.
Yeah, it's a good busy.
Yeah,
I've learned a ton. it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You win or you learn.
Right.
So learn some really valuable lessons. And yeah, it's been, I'm having an absolute blast. It's been so much fun.
Alex, you've got a couple of clients currently that people here in the Rocky Mountain region might be a little bit interested in. You've got a tight end that played his high school ball up at Longmont by the name of Clint Sigg. Great first name, by the way. And then you've got Elijah Reed, who played not very far from me over at Rangeview High School in Aurora. Where is the kind of the status of these two players? It sounds like Elijah Reed got a little bit of good news, didn't he?
He did. So he got a mini camp invite. So he got to go. The Jets were really interested in him. So he went out to New York the first weekend after the draft on a mini camp invite. You know, unfortunately, they did not offer him a contract at that time. He played safety up at the University of South Dakota, and yeah. He's a bigger kid. He's like 6'2", 210, 215 pounds. Oh, okay. And he's range. He's got good length. The Jets wanted to actually move him to linebacker.
Sure.
So we were hoping to get him in there as an undrafted free agent, but they ended up bringing him in as a mini camp invite, and they moved him to linebacker right away. And in a sense, I think that may have hurt him because he's, you know, probably 20, 25 pounds lighter than a lot of the guys he's, you know, going up against in reps. So, but he got at least an opportunity, and that's, he was a 3-year starter at South Dakota. He had a really nice career. I don't think his playing days are done by any stretch of the imagination. And then, yeah, Clint Sigg, he was a tight end from Longmont, like you mentioned. He went to Lindenwood, which is D2 school over in Missouri. He had a really, really nice pro day. I mean, really nice. Have you ever heard of, there's a Twitter account called @MathBomb. They do a relative athletic score. It's this guy, he created his own algorithm.
Oh, yeah.
He compares like everybody's pro day results to everybody who played in that position going back to like 1987.
Sure.
Clint was in the top third of all tight ends.
Wow.
In the NFL. I mean, he had a really fantastic pro day. Unfortunately for him, I don't quite know why it didn't work out. I had really high hopes for him.
Yeah.
We had a lot of pre-draft talks with, you know, a handful of teams. He fit the body type mold, good athleticism, good film. But I don't know if it's because he went to a Division II school.
Sure.
I don't know if it's because he's a little bit older. He had a COVID year, plus he transferred twice. So, you know, he was probably 24 coming out of college as opposed to these guys who are 21, 22.
Right.
So we've had some talks with some teams post-draft, and, you know, he still might end up somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's one that's probably looking at maybe the XFL if the NFL doesn't call here in the next couple of weeks. You know, again, we're having some discussion with some teams, but, you know, the minute that draft ends, so pick 256 or whatever, 262, whatever the pick was this year.
Right.
Once that pick ends, it's chaos. Most people don't know, but like in the first like 15 minutes, every team's calling, and they got their entire coaching staff, all their scouts, everybody gets a position group, and they're just trying to fill their rosters, whether it's UDFA, undrafted free agent, or a mini camp invite. And it just happens so quick. And if your phone doesn't ring, there's not a lot of time to try and get, you know, your guy with a mini camp invite. I mean, these rosters fill up extremely fast. So, like I said, I learned a lot of valuable lessons about the draft and, you know, what to take when teams start reaching out. What does it really mean? What does it not mean? Probably could do a better job of, you know, managing players' expectations, because I probably got caught up a little bit in like, hey, this team reached out. They seemed really interested. Well, they might be, but they might also not be, because you don't know what's going to happen on draft day. They might pick two guys at your position in the draft. They might, you know, who knows what happens in those war rooms. So it was a really good experience, but yeah, hopefully we can still find a home for some of these guys, because they're good football players.
Well, and I was just thinking about that because, you know, we think about watching the draft and all of us are all excited to watch the draft. Watching the draft with you has got to be completely insane because we're cheering for our teams, or we're cheering for our colleges, or we're cheering for local kids or whatever. I'm assuming you're tracking positions and team needs and a whole host of other things, who's contacted, who hasn't contacted. I mean, what was draft day kind of like for you just a few weeks ago? What were you doing? Is it just on your phone with a charger in your hand nonstop? How does that work?
Yeah, this was the first year that I've watched every single pick. I did not miss a pick this year.
Okay.
Because like you, I'm a fan, right? So, you know, as a Packer fan, the Packers picked in round two. Well, they don't pick again for another 30 picks. I'm going to go, you know, eat a sandwich, whatever, have a beer. But this year, yeah, it was a lot of, okay, I know that these teams at least have expressed some interest in one of my players. Okay, so team X, and my client's a tight end, they expressed interest, but now are they going to draft a tight end? You know, what are they doing? Do they trade back for more picks? You know, how many UDFA spots do I think they're going to have available post-draft? Because again, a lot of my guys are probably not going to get drafted.
Okay.
So I was focused more on what's going to happen immediately after the draft. So how many spots do they have available? Do they draft somebody at my guy's position? And, you know, once the fifth, sixth rounds kick off on Saturday, right as probably the general population's turning off their TV, You've never heard, I mean, the casual fan has not heard of most of the guys who are going on Saturday of the draft. But that's when the agent's work really begins, because now teams are starting to reach out. Your phone's starting to go off. And if it's not, that's a sign too. Like, hey, I'm not hearing anything. So if someone calls, and you know, they might call the player directly, and you don't have a lot of time, right? So when a team calls after the draft, they might say, hey, here's our offer, take it or leave it. So if they call my player directly, I need to have coached him on what to say, whether we want to go to that team or not. And so, you know, all day during the draft, you're keeping track of who's going where to which teams, but also constantly communicating with your guys. Hey, that was a good pick for us. Or, hey, no, that wasn't a good pick for us. If this team calls, this is what we want to do. Those types of conversations. So yeah, Saturday kicked everybody out of my house. My wife, my kids, they were all gone. Had some peace and quiet. Phone was on the charger. I don't get great cell service in this house either. So I was constantly like doing test calls with my wife, like,
sure,
hey, make sure this, my phone's working. but yeah, it was, like I said, it was a lot of fun, but you know, very stressful.
Oh, I can't even imagine. You know, every year in the draft, we see players rise, we see them fall. And I know this year we didn't have, maybe it's because we didn't have the big skill position group aside from wide receivers, I guess, quarterbacks, running backs, tight ends, kind of quiet, but we see surprises. We see guys drop that we didn't expect. I have to think some of those you're kind of expecting. You know more than what the average fan is knowing. So you're going, well, yeah, but I had kind of heard they were slipping. Or are they just as surprising to you?
You know, the big thing with risers and fallers, most of the time, that's just a media narrative. Scouts got these guys pretty well pegged. So I'll give you like, maybe one of the more famous examples from this last draft was Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yep.
You know, he was probably in December, the media consensus to be the number one overall pick. And he quote unquote slipped to pick five. Well, but if you talk to scouts, they probably didn't have him at pick one. They probably had him in that 5 to 10 range. And, you know, in the media, especially like around November, December, your Adam Schefters, your Ian Rapoport's, all of your media insiders, they're talking to general managers or maybe even directors of scouting. But draft boards aren't even beginning to be done until December. So, you know, a general manager might be like, oh yeah, Kayvon Thibodeau is, you know, the number one overall pick. So what's being reported may not be false. But then when they get into their war room and they start building their board and their scouts like, hey, actually, I think these four guys are better. Then you'll see like, oh, Thibodeau's slipping down draft boards. Well, he's not really slipping. He's probably just falling to where he actually belongs.
Right.
You know, this draft, I will say, was unique in the fact that you had four guys, I believe, in the green room on Thursday that not only didn't get picked in round one, but round two.
Yeah.
I mean, or three. You had Malik Willis and
Corral.
Corral, yes, thank you. Yeah. They both slipped till the round three. N'Kobe Dean, the linebacker from Georgia,
he slipped
to round three. Yeah, but for him, it seemed to be more medical.
Yeah, and, for sure.
Same with like Justin Ross, wide receiver from Clemson. You know, he was a consensus first round pick a year ago, but he went undrafted. And I think a lot of the concerns were based on his medical reports. So that is a huge component that I don't know if they're not my client. The media doesn't get access to their medical information, but the teams all have it. So you got to be prepared for it. And, you know, as an agent, it's interesting. N'Kobe Dean fired his agent immediately after the draft. Right. So, you know, I don't think it's his agent's fault that he went in the third round, but also you probably should have had better discussions with him to not send him to Vegas if you knew this was a possibility.
For sure.
So, because it's embarrassing to be there and then you don't go day one and you don't go until the second round of day two. So,
right. Well, and you know, you talked about a team comes out and they say, hey, this is kind of the group we're looking at, or maybe we have this player kind of pegged in this kind of area. But then there's also every team lies, don't they? Like,
yes.
If I'm the GM, there's no way I'm telling you what I'm really doing. There's no way.
Yeah. Did you see Lewis Seen, the safety from Georgia, took to Twitter to complain about that? Apparently, yeah, he had conversations with Tampa like, hey, if you're still on the board at 27, we're picking you.
Right.
And then it's time for Tampa to pick and they trade out of the pick and they don't pick, they don't take him. And he ends up falling to 32, the last pick in round one to the Vikings. So teams lie. I've experienced it. And, yeah, and maybe lie is too strong of a word. It's a, the draft is complex. There's a lot of moving parts. There's probably 10 to 15 decision makers in the room that they're all kind of going, okay, if this sure happens, we're doing this. So when you get that information, it may be legitimate, but you have to control your excitement when a team says, yes, we are going to pick you here, right, or we're really interested in you here, because it might come and they might go a different direction. They might trade out of the pick. Yeah. There's so much possibilities within the draft.
Well, and it can be gamesmanship. It can be, well, we thought we were going to do that. We legitimately did, but then, you know, things change and board changes and we saw someone else that might be, of things can change and move around.
That's my favorite thing with the official 30 visits, or, you know, the media will call them top 30 visits, right? So yeah, before the draft, teams can bring in up to 30 guys. And, you know, there's a lot of news, right? Oh, the Packers brought in this player for a workout. And they might be doing that just to make the team who's behind them think they're actually interested, right, in that guy. And they might have zero interest in ever drafting
this guy.
Yep. Yeah. So there is a lot of gamesmanship and a lot of media reports that teams will leak on purpose to, you know, get the rest of the league think they're going one direction. Absolutely. And they go a different. So,
okay, coming back, I want to ask Alex what he is hoping for when one of his players is selected. Is he hoping for best fit? Would he prefer they be drafted higher and maybe not worry about that fit? We are also going to really drill down on the whole NCAA name and likeness issue. Could this eventually help maybe level the field a little bit in college sports? And we also ask the most important question of the day, and that of course is, how much could the Daily Dose get involved in name and likeness? We're going to get to that and a lot more when we get back. When you're looking at a player to be drafted, and I know that you're probably hoping for the best of both worlds if you can get it, but are you hoping for the higher pick? Are you hoping for the best situation? Are you hoping for this is where he could actually make it, or maybe I'd rather he not be drafted so he can go sign somewhere else? Like, as an agent, how are you looking at that situation kind of unfold?
There's two things to consider. One is money, and the other is long-term. So, you know, the higher your pick, the more money you're going to make, and that's great. And the more money a team invests in you, the better odds you are to make the roster. But at the same time, fit's extremely important. And I think about this in the context of wide receivers or tight ends. Like, your career is directly tied to your quarterback.
Yes.
So you could have all the talent in the world, but if you have a subpar quarterback or an offensive line that can't keep the quarterback on his feet or whatever the situation might be, yep, like, your career could be done before it even gets started, just because your success is directly tied to another position.
Oh, yeah.
So that, you know, you do want to have those discussions, because the average career in the NFL is only 4 years, or it's less than 4 years. And if you want to make that life-changing money, you do need to make it to at least your second contract. So fit is extremely important. I will say that it's an honor to be drafted. Even, you know, Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant this year. That's something no one will ever get to take away from him. But if you talk to his agent, would he have rather not gotten drafted and then maybe find a better home that he can maybe compete for that second, you know, backup quarterback spot? Maybe. Those are things you certainly look at for sure. Is, okay, if we don't get drafted, now we can pick at least of the teams that are interested, and we can look at depth charts. We can look at our competition. So yes, there's pros and cons to both, and discussions you have to have with your clients.
Alex, I know that you work on the NFL side of things, but because you do, you also are looking at prospective clients. You have to deal with collegiate athletes as well. How well versed do you have to be in all that name and likeness stuff? And that stuff, by the way, is just exploding right now.
We can talk
about that a little bit, but how, I'm assuming you've got to be really, really up on everything.
You do. And to be honest, like, a year ago when I was getting into this industry, I had never thought that I would potentially be talking to high school athletes. And in 10 months of name, image, and likeness, I think that's probably going to change. I think your 4 and 5 star recruits for sure, at least on the path we are on. The path we are on with name, image, and likeness and collectives, rightly or wrongly, getting into the recruiting game, I think most kids should and will have an agent or an attorney to help manage this money, this component of it, to protect their eligibility. Yep. Because it is exploding. The NCAA this past week has issued, I'm not even going to call it new guidance, but like a reminder, like, hey, these are our rules and we're going to start enforcing them. Those will probably immediately be challenged in court and we'll see where that goes. But you, like, as a agent, you know, talking to a high school kid, they need to be aware of the risks of accepting that contract. And, you know, what does this mean for your potential eligibility? Because yes, it might be overturned in court, but that could be 6 years from now. And if you don't ever get to play college football, you just, you know, ruined your chances. So I've had to be extremely well-versed in it. And to be honest, a lot of agencies are now using name, image, and likeness to land recruits earlier. You know, yes, a year ago, you couldn't sign a kid until their eligibility was up. Well, now I can sign them to a marketing deal. I can put a little cash in their pocket. And if I do a good job, obviously, you hope that player will continue to use you as their representative as they go to the NFL. So you've seen the bigger agencies jump in right away, working with these top level athletes to get the marketing deal so that when they are eligible for the draft, they use them as their agent. So yeah, it's evolving very rapidly. You're trying to learn on the fly, but you have to be, I think, well-versed in NIL. Otherwise, you're probably not going to have too many clients, because the top level football players are getting paid now. And they need representation. They need help with it. They need good representation. I think the hardest thing is agents have always had a bad image, kind of slimy, you know, doing backroom deals, and, you know, they're just out for money. And you're seeing that, which is disappointing, because it's, I think there is a place for agents and attorneys to help these young men navigate these waters. But, you know, unfortunately, just like in any industry, there's bad players, and hopefully that can get weeded out and called out, because
yes,
we don't need any more bad publicity as agents.
No. And I agree with you. And, you know, maybe that's going to eventually be on the NFL to kind of sort through and figure out, okay, should you really be able to do this work? Alex, right now it feels like the Wild West. Anything is possible. We've got money flying around. Boosters are just blatantly recruiting. Where, and I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot with this question, because nope, I don't know if anybody knows. Where is this going to go? Are we going to get some sort of legislation step in and go, okay, we've got to have some kind of limits on this, because this is insane. It doesn't feel, I guess, sustainable.
You know, the sustainability question I do wonder about. And I also wonder, like, who's really getting hurt here? The people who are complaining the loudest seem to be coaches from Power Five schools that maybe aren't getting the same recruits they were getting.
Right.
You know, my big thing throughout this whole process is, you know, the big concern coming from these universities is, you know, college football is going to be destroyed and there's not going to be any parity. But if you look at it, like that kid from California, Nico Amoliva, high school junior right now, got an NIL deal to attend Tennessee.
Yeah.
He was like the third ranked quarterback in his class. I can almost guarantee you, if NIL wasn't in place, he's not going to the University of Tennessee. They haven't been good since Peyton Manning. Correct. So I think that NIL can actually can do a better job of spreading out talent, because, you know, Georgia is not going to be able to pay their third string quarterback what Tennessee is going to pay a starter. And there hasn't been much parity in college football anyway. If you look at the college football playoff the last 8 years, it's Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma. I mean, it's Georgia. It's the same schools every year. So maybe NIL can spread that wealth out a little bit. In terms of where does this go, I agree that it quickly evolved from, this is now an opportunity for college athletes to make money, to, like, it's hard to get an NIL deal if you're already enrolled in college. It's all the money's going towards recruiting, which is not what it was designed to do. The problem is the NCAA, when they lost the Supreme Court case last summer, the Alston case, they were like cut at the knees. I mean, they haven't done anything.
No.
And now we're almost a year into it. And now they're going to decide to finally try and enforce this. And they say they're not going to go after the athletes. They're going to go after the boosters, the collectives, or even the school. It's going to be challenged in court immediately.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to win. It's going to be, so under antitrust law, you have to prove that the consumer would be harmed if this regulation was not enforced. So essentially the consumer is the fan, and the NCAA would have to prove that if we don't enforce these rules, we're going to lose viewers. And to be honest, I don't think that's going to be the case.
I don't think it is either.
You look at college basketball this last year when NIL was in full force and the NCAA tournament's ratings were up 12%.
Yep. I mean, booming.
And professional sports has never been higher. So yes, may it be quote unquote a different product. I guess you could argue that, but I don't think the consumer is going to care. So that leaves the NCAA two options. One, they can get federal legislation from Congress. I don't see that happening. We're in an election year. Plus, Congress can't agree on anything.
No.
Or maybe they go down the path of like the Power Five or the Group of Five splitting off from the NCAA and doing some sort of collective bargaining agreement where they can control, you know, they can put some controls in place. But outside of either federal legislation or a collective bargaining agreement, they can't control trade under antitrust law. So they're kind of, they've put themselves in a bad position by not doing anything for 10 months.
Yes.
And I don't see a good way out of it without a drastic change to what we think about specifically college football, although you could probably make the argument for men's and women's basketball as well.
Yeah. Well, and when you see, you know, they're having these meetings now and they're sending different people and you're seeing people from the big conferences go, and you're not really seeing NCAA representation go, that kind of makes me wonder again, what is it exactly you're doing? Have you just been cut at the knees so much that, hey, they're just completely toothless. They can't really do much of anything and they don't really know what to do. That's what it's kind of feeling like. Mm-hmm. And it does kind of feel like we're heading toward Power Five conference minor league program, I guess. I don't even know, but it kind of feels like that's where it's going.
But it's, you know, from my point of view, it's been like that anyway. I mean,
it absolutely has.
College football has always been the minor leagues for the NFL, whether people want to admit it or not.
No, it totally has.
Yeah. And so now I think these athletes have an opportunity. Again, they just need to be careful not to chase just the dollar and, you know, looking at fit. You know, the transfer portal, I think the transfer portal is great for athletes to be able to move. But right now there's over 70% of those athletes who are stuck out in the portal that don't have a home.
Insane.
So again, what advice are these athletes getting? Because before you jump into the transfer portal, you need to understand what that means for you. Because yes, you can always go back to the program you're trying to transfer from, but now the coaching staff knows you don't want to be there. Like your odds of getting more playing time are zero.
Right. You've kind of burnt that bridge. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, understanding what that is and understanding, you know, where you might be able to go, what impact on freshmen does this have? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts that the lid's kind of been cracked open on, and I don't know, you can't stuff this back in the tube.
No.
So we now need to move forward with a system, whether it's collective bargaining. I think there's a guy on Twitter that I follow, Mitt Winter. He's a sports lawyer, really good follow. He's been pushing the collective bargaining angle. I think that's where it's going to go, because then whether they unionize or not, that's not really important. But if it's, you know, some sort of collective bargaining agreement, we can have salary caps in place. We can have specific recruiting rules.
Right.
What's allowed, what's not allowed. I mean, there do need to be some guardrails in place. I'm not in favor of just this chaotic system.
Yeah.
But there's, I think, a 0% chance we go back to how it was a year ago.
Oh no.
Where, you know, kids can't make money, they can't get jobs, and they have to sit out a year when they transfer. I just don't see that coming back.
So. I don't see how it could. And like you said, I don't think you can put that back in. There's going to be way too much support. There's going to be lawsuits. There's going to be my thing. And I've been saying this for a number of years, is that I am of the belief, and this is where I feel like people like you are so important. I am of the belief that these kids need good, ethical agents to go out, make sure these boosters aren't going to rob them, make sure these schools have at least somewhat of their best interests at heart, and put them in good, healthy situations, because you're not dealing with necessarily a pro sports team or even a college. Sometimes you're dealing with a booster. Who knows what they're doing? You need someone to look out for the kids. Because at the end of the day, that's who this is all supposed to be about, right? The best thing for the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, before NIL, agents were treated as the enemy, especially from the schools.
Right.
I mean,
if you touched an agent, you were poisoned.
Yeah. Yeah. And all they cared about is making sure you could play on Saturday.
Yep.
So don't talk to agents. Agents are bad news. And so then what happens? It's like prohibition with alcohol. Well, then they do it the backroom channels, and then you are getting the slimy agents in there. Exactly. And they are getting the bad advice. And, you know, unfortunately, both the athlete and their parents are in the dark about even the process to get into the NFL. What does this mean? You know, what should I be doing? What should training look like? All of that stuff, they're trying to figure it out on their own. And in my experience, universities haven't done a good job of educating their athletes to transition to pro. And now I think it's even more important for universities to probably educate their athletes coming in. Okay, here's what can happen. Here's what you can do. Here's what you can't do. Here's who you should look for, or here's what you should look for in an agent. Here's what is, you know, a red flag. Like, they're going to need, Deion Sanders had a great little TikTok or Twitter video yesterday. Like, we need more resources to educate, because now we're going to have athletes that are making more than our coaches.
Yep.
And we need to treat them that way, and they need to be educated. Otherwise, if you leave it up to them, there's going to be mistakes, and we can't just throw our hands up and blame the system. We need to educate them, put them with the right representatives, the right mentors, so that they do understand how to manage this money. They do understand what the pros and cons of a contract are, although everything that goes into it, so that they can succeed.
Alex, you bring up someone that I actually have down here to ask you a question about. You bring up Deion Sanders. He's the head coach down at Jackson State. This last year, somehow Deion pulls one of the top recruits in the country in Travis Hunter, gets him to go to a small school. There's no way we're going to start seeing more of this with the name and likeness stuff like you talked about. Maybe it spreads the wealth a little more. This might be happening more and more, huh?
I think so. And I think the NFL and all-star games like the Senior Bowl have done a really good job of highlighting some of those HBCUs to make it, you know, I don't want to sound like nerdy here, but cool to go to a historically black college. And you get a coach like Coach Prime. There was another big name coach that went to another HBCU. I'm blanking on the name right now. So you're starting to see this transition, which is, I think, great. And again, parity is great. That's what makes the men's basketball tournament so much fun, because you can get a team like St. Peter's make it to the Elite Eight. College football, we haven't had that. It's the same five teams. And if you're ranked 10th, you have a 0% chance of winning a national championship, even if they extended the playoff, because Alabama is going to kick in the teeth of whoever the number 8 ranked team is if we expand the playoff. So, you know, I think NIL can do that. I think you're seeing it with Jackson State. I think you'll see it, you know, like I mentioned, the kid going to Tennessee.
Yeah.
I think you'll start to see some of these other programs get creative around NIL and, yeah, maybe land a few more 5-star recruits who aren't all congregated in the Southeastern Conference.
I really hope so. And I hope it does start to create a little more of a level playing field. I think it's going to take people understanding kind of how to make this work. And you're going to see the more creative ones figure out a way to do this. Okay. We have a name and likeness expert here. We have someone who actually understands the legality of it, understands the inner workings of it. Alex, I've got a question for you. Can I go out and find a player, maybe like a small, you know, college player? You deal with some smaller college guys. You got a couple of guys that you're working with directly. Maybe I give them, like, I don't know, $5, have them wear my t-shirt, and the Daily Dose could have our own name and likeness player. Would that kind of thing be allowed? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, there's no reason why it's not. That's what NIL was intended to be, right? We want to use your name, image, and likeness to rep the Daily Dose and wear this t-shirt, put it on Instagram, and we'll pay you $10 or whatever. Yeah, that's exactly what NIL was designed to do.
I need to reach out to Clint Sigg and talk to this guy about that. He's got a great name. We're cheering for that guy. Went to Longmont.
I get a share of that $5.
Exactly.
So yeah, let's set it up.
Let's make this happen. I absolutely love it. Alex, before we let you go, and I genuinely appreciate you coming by. You have so much information and so much knowledge. It's just great to have it. Going into the NFL and looking at the actual NFL, we are seeing right now a number of players kind of starting to challenge and hey, I don't want to be here anymore. I want to go somewhere else. I want to be traded. I'm kind of demanding a trade, or I'm asking for a trade, or I'm hinting. I don't like this situation. Are NFL players starting to get more power? Is that a good thing if they do? Because we've seen it's not always a good thing in the NBA. So I don't know. Is there kind of a fine line we need to walk? You don't have the power in the NFL that you do in the NBA, but are we starting to see players make a run at trying to get that?
You know, really interesting question. So let's go back to 2021. You remember Russell Wilson wanted out of Seattle, Aaron Rodgers wanted out of Green Bay, and Deshaun Watson wanted out of Houston. Well, all three of those guys stayed put. So a year ago, the answer was clearly no. Teams still hold all the power. Well, now this year, Rodgers stayed in Green Bay, but he got a massive extension. Russell is in now Denver, as you and your audience well know.
Right.
And Deshaun went to Cleveland, and not only did he go to Cleveland, he got a much better deal, and it might have been facilitated by his off the field actions, which is, you know, probably a topic for a different podcast. But and then you saw it in the wide receiver market. Davante Adams wanted out of Green Bay. He got traded. Tyreek Hill wanted out of Kansas City. He got traded. So it does seem to be that players are able to move more frequently. Is it a player empowerment question, or is it that salaries are getting so high that if a guy really doesn't want to be there, the teams don't want to bully that player because it's not worth having a guy who's unhappy and paying him $30 million a year?
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, with wide receivers specifically, and you saw it on draft day with the Titans moving on from AJ Brown, which I did not see coming.
No.
But they saw, okay, AJ Brown's going to make, he wants $25 million a year. So $100 million is what he got with the Eagles for 4 years. Or we can draft Treylon Burks and pay him $18 million over 4 years.
Over 4 years, yeah.
So I think there's going to be a split in the NFL between philosophies where there's going to be some teams that want the high-priced free agent, whether it's to sell jerseys or they just want, you know, the very top end of that position group. And there's going to be teams like the Packers, the Chiefs, the Titans who said, look, we can get a guy who maybe isn't as good, but maybe is 85, 90% that we can pay less than 25% of that salary to. So it's an interesting question. Is it empowerment where athletes can flex their muscles, or is it, you know, teams being smart about, well, maybe smart's not the right word. They think they're being smart about financial decisions.
Sure.
And then you get Deebo Samuel, who he wanted out and the 49ers said, no, they flex their muscle. And, you know, as an agent, you need to tell your player, look, the team still has all the power. Yeah. Like Deebo Samuel is stuck in San Francisco. He's got another year in his contract. You'll never see a player hold out. It's too expensive. He'd be fined $40,000 a day. Plus he would lose signing bonus money. It's too expensive. You might see a hold in, you know, the guys show up and, oh, my hamstring hurts and you know, I can't practice, that type of thing.
Of course.
But if they want you there, you need to be there. And then even worse, you might play this year. And when he would be a free agent next year, they still have the franchise tag for another 2 years.
Yes, they do.
So management and teams still have all of the leverage. But you are seeing star players say, I don't want to be here, and are getting moved. So is this a trend? Maybe as salaries continue to rise. I think it might be. Quarterbacks will be a really interesting one. Deshaun getting his fully $230 million fully guaranteed.
Yeah.
What does that do for teams like the Chargers who have Herbert coming up, the Bengals with Burrow? You know, some of these franchises who aren't rich in cash, do they extend a guy like Burrow? Do they move on from him because they can't afford it? It's going to be really fascinating to watch what teams do at some of these positions that are, you know, really rising quickly in the pay scale.
Alex, I could sit here and have this conversation with you all day. It is absolutely fascinating. You've got so much knowledge and so much insider knowledge that it's just, I just truly have enjoyed our conversation. Before we go, though, you have your own podcast. Where can people come and find in your work out there where you're doing some podcast work yourself?
Yeah, it's called Hitting Pay Dirt by Impact Sports. It's on both Apple and Spotify, so okay. Check it out. I try to get into the weeds. I try to look at current events in the NFL from an agent's perspective. If your audience really wants to get nerdy, I do some CBA talk and kind of get into the nitty gritty. So I try to give people an inside view of what's actually happening in the NFL and in the draft room and all that stuff. So yeah, Hitting Pay Dirt by Impact Sports. Check it out. It's on Apple and Spotify.
We are definitely going to do that. And I cannot thank you enough for stopping by the Daily Dose, giving us some great information. He's actually got, you know, intelligence and information. I'm up here just making, you know, jokes about people. So very, very great to have you here. And I really do appreciate you stopping by. You are welcome anytime. And if I can do anything to help you, let me know.
Yeah, I would love to come back on. You know, so this was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Hey, next week on The Dose, I know that the NFL released their schedule this past week. Well, we are going to be breaking down the best games that will be upcoming this season. Of course, we know the NFL likes to arrange some very, very interesting matchups, but it's not just going to be the National Football League, because you might not realize it, but there are some excellent out-of-conference college football matchups that we are going to have in the first month of the season. There are some really, really good games that are coming really, really soon. Plus, we'll have some breaking news. We'll have the return of the Daily Dose Top 5.
which has taken a few weeks off. So be sure you stop by next week and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you very much to Alex Beaudry from Impact Sports Management for stopping by The Dose and sharing your thoughts and your insight with us. We can't wait to have you back. And I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out some of the new things going up over there every week. But most of all, thank you so much for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.